but be prepared to bleed. Oh, God, you are in my blood, you're my holy wine, so bitter and so sweet. Oh, I could drink a case of you.
Jerry's pigeons are above us all. That's Genya Ravan. Remember her from 10 Wheel Drive? That's from her first solo album. I don't know if she did any more after that. Urban Desire. Before that, Case of You from Joni Mitchell from her album Blue. Good morning, New York, New Jersey, upstate, Connecticut. Sometimes when the weather's right, the wind patterns are correct and the clouds are not too cloudy. Pennsylvania. When I used to do a show called Cosmic Debris, which is now manned and womaned very competently by Rocky and Pandora, who I think were here last week. They're on the first Sunday of the month. When I used to do that show, I had a caller and a writer in from East Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania. And that was fun to hear from him. So, how y'all doing? Good, I hope. It's 5:11, 5:12 on a Sunday morning. My name is Sharon Griffiths, and we are here together to listen to Heresy, which is the name of this show, where radio speaks with a woman's voice. I have a malfunctioning set of headphones on my ear this morning, where my right ear keeps fading in and out. And it's very bizarre, but I will try to live with it while I'm here until 7 o'clock. It's kind of like when I had my cold, which was a couple of weeks ago, and my ears were very stuffed because of pressure from the sinuses. And I always felt like there was a ghost standing behind me with their finger in my ear, in both ears sometimes. And it was just very annoying. And now I have the same problem again, even though my ears are fine. But this, again, is WBAI in New York, after all. I'm going to talk this morning, as I talk almost every week. But this morning's topic is how ordinary women you see in the street, women you work with, women you're related to, either your mother, your aunt, your grandmother, whoever, can most often be, very extraordinary people. And they have led, in some respect or another, very extraordinary lives. And all you have to do is sit and talk to them. Women have a tendency to, I'm generalizing, but then again, why not? Women have a tendency to open themselves up to people faster and in greater detail than men do. Men are more guarded. I have a wonderful book at home that I have yet to sink my teeth into, like a juicy steak. I tend to think of books that way, as a delicious morsel of some kind or another. Not necessarily steak, because I'm not necessarily into that. But it's called You Just Don't Understand, and it's by Deborah Tannen, T-A-N-N-E-N, and it's a fairly popular book at this time. She is a PhD. She teaches language but she's a PhD in linguistics. And she has written this book, These Work of Sydney. Thank you, love. Excuse me while I make my switch here. She's written this book called The You Just Don't Understand, and it's about how men and women communicate with one another. And it's supposedly, from what I've read reviews, it's a fascinating study in communications. And I can't wait to get into it myself, and I believe it will probably prove me right when I'm generalizing here on how women do tend to open up. And get into each other's personal lives a lot easier than the way men do. I find that within myself, for certain. Last year, I met a woman at a social gathering. And within 10 minutes, we were talking about the most personal and private and intimate details of our lives. Why we had decided for or against having children, why we had decided for or against having serious relationships with the men that we were choosing, all sorts of things. And we were the only women at this gathering. And I seem to recall the men folk were over in a corner laughing and punching each other. No, they weren't. They were discussing whatever they were discussing. And I seem to remember that whenever there was a lull in their conversation, our confessions or our conversation would drift over to them. And I seem to recall glances from them, from the corner, the male corner of the yard, with such astonishment that these two people were over there talking about stuff and they had just been introduced. But I believe it wasn't just me. It wasn't just a phenomenon between me and this other woman. It's something that women do. And I feel very much attuned to it. So I have been collecting various articles from various places, from magazines, from newspaper, from a collection of writing in Holland and Flanders from 1979, and from another small feminist press magazine. And I have assembled these four stories and are going to read them for you tonight. They all prove my point or demonstrate my point as to that they're all women talking about other women in their lives and how special those women's lives were to the women who were writing. The first one I want to read is from a magazine, and unfortunately they're usually in a magazine. Now, I know that if this were my magazine, I would have somewhere on the page, and I have four pages of the magazine here, an indication of the title of the magazine. It seems to be a Sunday supplement, a Sunday magazine from a newspaper. And I don't know what newspaper. It might be Newsday. I'm just not sure. And it could be from the Daily News. I haven't seen Daily News magazine in a very long time. But it's by Amy Tan, who wrote The Joy Luck Club. And it has written The Kitchen God's Wife, which should be out this month. I have not read The Joy Luck Club, but from what I have heard, she's an extremely good writer in the vein of Maxine Hong Kingston, who wrote China Men, The Woman Warrior, and a few other books. It's of a Chinese-American woman writing about her family, her problems with assimilation into this culture, seeing as how the Asian culture, the Chinese culture specifically, is so different than American culture. And this is she talks in here about her mother, her aunt, and her grandmother and their secret stories, the hidden stories that, as I say, if you just sit down and talk with the woman in your life or women in your life, you will find that they are the keepers. They are the weavers of the stories. They hold your family history. Your women relatives probably hold your family history in their heads. And maybe they've written it down. Maybe they keep diaries. I know my mother didn't. But she was able to tell me lots and lots of things about her mother, her father, and her sister and brother, her immediate family, and also what she had heard from her mother about various other generations back in the family. And I haven't written it down. I haven't gone that far, and in some ways I'm a little sorry for that, because the family history on her side, which is the only side I really know anything about, goes back in the United States until about 1811, which is when her first ancestors came here. They were pioneers. And that particular aspect of my family history, I'm very, very proud of, that I am descended from pioneer women. I'm not particularly proud of the fact that they came out to Illinois in a covered wagon and probably massacred a lot of Native Americans and, did a lot of things that were unfortunately typical at the time. But the fact that they had enough guts to leave Europe, I think they were German, Irish, Scotch, some strange mixture. They left Europe and came here and just took what they had and went off into the netherworld, just out into the middle of nowhere, and started to make a life for themselves. That was only 30 years or so after the Revolutionary War. So that was a pretty early time in history. And that's the part of my history that I'm most proud of. So she would, and the reason I know about that is that we have the typical white Anglo-Saxon Protestant tradition of keeping the family Bible. And this particular Bible had been passed down not from 1811, but from a considerable time ago. And in it is a handwritten record, unfortunately very illegible, of who came when, who married who, and what babies they had, and what their names were, and who they married, and when they were born and died, and all of that. And the dates go back as far as 1811. So I'm in possession of this, but the people, most of the people, are just names on a page. And so I'm a little out of touch I'm totally out of touch with my father's side as far as history is concerned, because he, whether it was just a trait of his, he was a rather secretive and private, I mean secretive is a pejorative word, he was a private person. He did not talk about a lot of things. He was, he didn't know how to talk to me, being an older man. I believe I've spoken about this. He was 55 when I was born, so he was of a generation that would, he was of a time, his age, he would not have known or very easily been able to discuss things with a little girl. And I don't blame him for that. It's just the way it was. And, I mean, considering his age and all. So, I don't know a lot about his side of the family at all. But there were many nights that I sat and talked with my mother on Saturday nights He was generally out. He was a, although at home being very guarded and private, he was a great person for joining male clubs. The equivalent today, I suppose, would be the Elks, the Kiwanis Club, wherever there's a fraternal organization that men can congregate, not to get drunk and watch dirty movies, but to just be with men and men their own age, participate in award dinners and such. That was a big hit with him, and he liked to do that. So he would be out of the house on a Saturday night, generally off to some meeting or whatever. And my mother and I would have a chance to be alone, and we'd sit at the kitchen table, and we'd eat something that my father didn't want to eat, which was probably some kind of Italian food. My father was English. His parents were English, and he inherited from them, unfortunately, the love of, can I even call it such, English cuisine, which is really revolting. It's the kind of stuff where you take a fairly decent piece of meat and you fry it until you can't tell it from the bottom of your shoe, taste-wise or appearance-wise, and boiled potatoes, boiled vegetables, boiled meat, tasteless, bland stuff. So we would be having our forbidden spicy food, and lots of onion and garlic, and good stuff like that. And we would just sit and have, at that point, they were not historical talks about the family. They were just talks about whatever was on my adolescent mind. And we would talk about anything under the sun. And unfortunately, I really don't remember. I mean, I know it's back in the memory archive somewhere, but I don't remember a lot of the specifics about those talks. They just, after a while, when something happens in your life, something like that, having these heart-to-heart talks with your mother or a close friend or whoever, the specifics fade, but the mood remains. You can conjure up how you felt or how those things made you feel. And they made me feel real good, and they still do. So that's another thing that that I hope people can do. They need to sit down. Everybody needs to sit down with the important people in their lives and just talk. Turn off the TV. Turn off the radio. Hopefully not right now because I'm talking. And just communicate, because it's a good idea. You never know what you're going to learn. You never know what a person that you may have known all your life and have taken for ultimate granted can come up with. What did they do when they were your age? What did they know? What did they know about their parents and their grandparents? If you come from a really big family, you can definitely start taking this stuff down about, you know, who married who and moved away and where did they go and then who came over from wherever and settled down where and had how many kids and then what did they do and where did they go to school and who did they marry and all that. It's just something I think that people, not just women, people need to know about where they came from. I mean, the big renaissance in that was probably when Alex Haley came along and did that for himself and turned it into a book and a mini-series on television called Roots. And people did start to seriously consider where they came from, and it helps to ground you and sort of point you in a direction to where you're going, especially African-American people whose culture, whose original culture was left behind. They were divorced from it and forced into a totally alien culture, and they weren't even allowed to be part of that. So that was a very unifying thing. It brought about the notion that there was a whole nother civilization, a whole exciting and rich and comfortable civilization that and culture that they needed, that African-American people in the United States, they needed to belong to.